Hello and welcome to another episode of The Thing I Love Most show, and most definitely after last night, we all love Tottenham more than we did a few weeks ago. What a fantastic result last night. We're going to be touching on that very shortly. But before we do, I would like to introduce our guest this week, Mr. Lee Curtin. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you.
So another founder member of the Spurs Fans DSI group, which we have on Facebook, which is why we're doing this podcast. It's basically a website that was called don'tstayin.com. It had its own Spurs Fans group, all for people that should know better in terms of clubbing. And now we're all old, and now all we do is basically sit around talking about football. So we thought we'd write, you know, we create a podcast in order to do so. So we've got you here. So firstly, how did you get involved with the Spurs Fan DSI group in the first place?
So I was a member of another group where there's a few of the guys that I used to play football and coach football with, and they moved over to the DSI group, namely a gentleman called Stephen Holly.
Okay, yeah. And, I know Stephen.
Yeah, and Stephen invited me into the group, and it's been brilliant ever since, really.
Yeah.
In terms of groups, the debates, the discussions, yeah, they're top draw. So. It's been good fun.
And your life as a Spurs fan, when did it begin? When did you go to the first game?
The first game was, I did a little bit of research just to make sure I got it right. So the first game was December 85.
Okay.
And that was against Ipswich. And bizarrely enough, my primary school had a couple of free tickets. And I remember them asking us at an assembly who wanted the tickets. I put my hand up. No idea how I was going to get to Tottenham, as we're like over in Middlesex.
Yeah.
But I took the two tickets and my foster sister took us over. And yeah, ever since then, it's just been in the blood.
Awesome. Good. Okay, well, obviously, you know, we're feeling quite buzzed today after last night. And so we were going to actually hear from Richard, who is another member of Spurs Fans DSI, who was at the game last night, but it was a bit of a late one for him and he had a bit of an early morning, so unfortunately he's too tired to be on. But Richard, we'll hopefully get you involved in a couple of weeks' time on the show. So obviously it was a ridiculous result in the end, 3-0, none of us expected it. Those of you that did watch the show last week would have seen that I did actually predict a win, purely because they were short of confidence and they looked disjointed, and we really do have the players to hurt them on the break, especially, I felt, and that obviously came into fruition. So what was your thoughts on the match as a whole?
No, I agree. I didn't think we started particularly well, and we probably did our best at times to kind of give them the edge up. But once we settled in, I thought we seen out their threat. And once we got in at half-time, I was quite confident. We just started to find our feet, I think, 10 minutes before the half-time. And we looked like more was growing more and more into the game. And I thought had a good foothold in there. And I think getting to half time at United level, or, you know, in the game is always a bonus. Felt a bit hard done by the penalty. That never was. But I thought that was typical Tottenham's luck at Old Trafford. We came out and I thought we took control quite well. I think they were there for the taking last year as well. Mm. I think Leon George touched on it as well in the group about the cup semi-final, and we could go back and talk about kind of Poch's choices on that particular day in terms of selection, but I think we let them off the hook last year. And listening to Jose talking about finishing second, we was up there with them last season. You know, they just had the run in the end, and maybe, you know, a few signings they made, namely Sanchez, probably just saw him over the line ahead of us. But I think if you look at it now, I think we're as good as them. So to come out in the second half, again, just ride out their storm. And then once we got that goal, it was just good to see us, first of all, keeping a kind of strong defence and not cave in straight away. We seem to make this habit of giving the team a chance straight after we score. But getting away with that and going up the other end and probably putting the game to bed at that point,
There were two Lukaku chances which sort of like changed the game in a way. Obviously, the Danny Rose back pass, the open goal which he missed, and then just after we scored, there was a chance which was really well saved by Lloris. So you spoke about the defence. Obviously, Poch went back to a back four.
Yep.
And dropped Sanchez, which was a brave move. Were you surprised by the formation and the team selection?
I liked the team selection. First and foremost, when it was put up, I liked it. Sanchez is a funny one for me. He's got the speed. He's got the speed. He's got the strength. I still worry about him sometimes. He still looks a bit nervy on the ball at times. But in saying that, I can see why you play him. And he's hit the ground and gone straight in. He's hit the ground running at Spurs, to be fair to him. For a young lad, you know, he was kind of chucked in and he's battled well and he deserves his place. However, I do believe when Toby and Jan are playing, while he may lose a little bit of that pace, there's a little bit more... A little bit more calmness. I think we just look a little bit more secure. We look a little bit calmer. And saying that, I don't think Toby's firing on all cylinders either. I was at the Fulham game and watched closely last night. He still seemed a little bit sluggish. But there is a calmness there. You know, there's a bit more... I think everyone just seems a bit more assured.
And do you think we look better in a back four?
I think it suited last night. Mm-hmm. I think it suited last night. And with Dier and Dembele just in front, trying to nullify any of the threats... I think we may have been expecting Sanchez to play and he would probably cause us more problems just with his movement off the ball. But he didn't, and I don't think Lukaku posted many. I mean, he had the two chances, we gave him one. I don't think they posed that many. He didn't pose that much of a threat. I think Jan and Toby kind of got his number, really. So I don't think we needed Sanchez in terms of his pace.
Yeah, I agree. We were talking about it in the group in the week, the selection, and I think most of us said that we should stick with a back four in terms of if we were going to go to a back three, then we were maybe going to have to drop someone in terms of getting Dembele in the team because it looked like he was going to have to support Dier, and therefore maybe Moura would have been the person that was going to be dropped. But obviously, you know, he was man of the match against Fulham, and as we saw last night, but it would have been madness to drop him. So I think it was definitely the right formation, and obviously hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think you're right. I think Sanchez, as Jeremy mentioned last week on the show, I think is better in a back three, and like you said, he's still learning, he's still reading the game.
Was he 21, 22?
Yeah, 21, 22, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, he's going to get a lot better, and it will really help him learning from Jan and Toby. So, and we will play the back three, I think, quite a lot this season as
yeah.
well. So,
well, I hope we do, and I hope that I think one of the things that people have moaned about Poch in the past is probably inability to mix up the formations, or you know, when we play teams, we've kind of kept to one and just kind of persisted and tried to push players into it. So, I think it's good to see that maybe we'll take each game as it comes, or whatever the other team poses. And if everybody's buying into it, then I think it can only be a good thing.
And what about Moura? Obviously, man the match again, two in a row. You were at the Fulham game. You saw it live. I mean, I think last season, obviously, fitness was an issue, we believe. Coming from PSG, he wasn't up to scratch. And obviously, Poch demands some really, really high levels of fitness. So I think, you know, he wasn't there. We saw glimpses of it in the cup games and stuff. But I think, you know, getting a start has really given him a boost of confidence, and he just looks like a different player.
He looks part of the squad now.
Yeah.
And I think probably, as we touched on last year, he's probably just settling in, finding his feet. Quite an interesting quote from Jamie Carragher was, after he spoke to Poch at the Premier League launch, is that the boys that arrived from PSG, Moura and Aurier, both arrived with not particularly good fitness levels. Mm-hmm. And it might go in some way to explaining...
Yeah.
Aurier's performances last season, because I know he's very Marmite, and then obviously why we didn't see as much of Moura as we would have liked to, and obviously the levels of fitness I think they keep at Tottenham are particularly high, as you can see when we're playing a pressing game, it needs to be on point. So I don't think you can come in half fit.
I must say, when Aurier came on, even though we were winning 2-0, I still was worried, and he tried his best.
He took Fellaini out, didn't he? I think with like 5 minutes ago, and you're thinking just, a free kick there. With five minutes ago, plus famous Old Trafford stoppage time, it could have been an unnecessary nail biter. But no, we got through, and like I said, he's Marmite. He's not for me, just for the record.
No,
but
no, it's Rodney calls him Marmite, but
I disagree.
I think there's far more people that. I don't think it's 50-50. I think Marmite implies he's 50-50. For me, it's about 80-20?
Well, he has the attributes. And I think I find that as somebody kind of, you know, coaches football and play the game, he's got all the attributes. And mm. I just find it quite frustrating watching him, when, you know, when he makes those daft tackles, when he's clearly got the strength
can,
and speed.
Surely that can be coached. I would have thought so.
I'd like to think so, and I think that Poch would probably, it's probably something that Poch and his team are working on. I don't think that would go unnoticed, not at that level. But then sometimes, you know, people will get that rush of blood. Players will get it. It doesn't matter how much you coach him. I mean, he'll probably go from sliding on the floor five times to twice.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to take that and call it an improvement. That's just, I think that's probably just the nature of his game. He's not going to be one to stand on his feet and shepherd somebody out of play. I think he feels the need to let somebody feel his 18 stone or whatever it may be.
And just finally, on reflection of last night's game, obviously, Mourinho. We have to speak about Mourinho because he's a colourful character. He also obviously splits opinion. So some of his comments afterwards were quite strange. I don't know if you saw all of the interviews.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, he said that they won the game tactically and strategically, which is quite interesting. And then he got very offended in the press conference and he started basically saying 3-3-3, as in like they lost 3-0, but then he's won three Premier Leagues and the other 19 managers combined have only won two between them. And he was saying 3-2 and then he walked off saying respect, respect, respect. I mean, it's crazy. So the point I wanted to sort of raise was, do you think that sort of, it's negativity that he's surrounding himself in, and do you think that's helpful to the team? Do you think it rubs off on the players? Would you, if Poch was to do that, what would you, your reaction be?
Not for me. I wouldn't like it if that was Poch's style. I think last night was quite interesting because I think you can almost see the black and white of the two managers there. I think, you know, I don't think we're in two dissimilar boats, to be honest. We didn't spend money, our choice. You know, we can identify the right players that we needed, so we've gone about it a different way. He on the other hand, wanted to chuck 200 million at a load of centre-backs. When you look at it, you know, the way Poch handles himself and the way Mourinho handles himself, you know, I don't think we'd tolerate that, Delane. I just don't think you'd have it. And when I look back, it's clear to see then that Poch is clearly a better coach than Mourinho. Mourinho's kind of known for buying players who are already there, who already kind of established themselves, spends big money on them, because he's never nowhere for more than 3 years. So he gets the trophies and he can shout free this and free that as much as he likes. It's quite disrespectful. He's living in the past, you know, and I'll be hard pushed to find any players who go, you know, he's coached me this well, he's made me such a better player. They're already there, they're already established, they come with medals in their pockets, you know. And what he does do is probably, you know, he's tactically astute, but on the training ground, I think he'd be found wanting if you put him up against Pochettino in terms of coaching a player and making him.
Well, I think that's evident, really, isn't it? Because he's had the players like Jones this morning, he's had those centre-backs, Lindelof, Bailly, and he hasn't made them better at all. And so they're struggling massively. I don't think he knows his best team either.
No, you know? He's playing around, he's searching. You know, I think last year, when he was struggling, he put Sanchez straight into the team. Sanchez sitting on the bench yesterday. Martial's not in the squad. Rashford's on the bench. You know, he's probably created more problems than they had when he arrived, to be honest with you.
Well, you can tell as well, though, and I think that's one of the reasons why I did think we'd win, is because the players themselves don't really know what's going on. Like, he made about five or six changes. There were six players last night that hadn't played, I think, this season. So it's like, you know, if you're in that squad and one, you don't really know what formation he's playing, he played Pereira at right centre back. Two, you don't know if you're playing yourself. It's just all very, very mixed up and it's just sending the wrong messages to your squad. If you compare it to ours, you pretty much know, you know, eight or so of the first 11 and you know it's either going to be 3-5-2 or it's going to be 4-2-3-1, you know, and that's the way it's going to be. And they know that and they respond to that because they're settled.
I think both their interviews after as well, Poch touched on his squad, you know, and how united they are. They're united, the staff are united, the fans are united, so everybody's behind the project. If, you know, if we're in a bit of a predicament because we don't know when we're going to our stadium or, we, you know, if something's going on, we wanted new players and they didn't come, we're not 100% sure. They're there. The ones that are there, you know, they want to play, they want to be part of the project. flip over and look at the other side, I'm not too sure you could say the same about Mourinho's squad. You know, and they should be in a far better position. So, you know, long may we go under the radar. And with Poch's mentality, I think we probably will.
So Kane obviously loves scoring in August. He's now up to two in the month of August in his career. What were your thoughts on his performance? Because obviously we're all a little bit worried about the fact he still looked a bit jaded in the first two games. I thought he looked a little bit sparkier. Obviously his header was incredible and reminded me a lot of the goal against Arsenal that he scored from the Bentaleb ball in the derby a few years back. But he then set up the goal for Moura, so he got a goal and assist, you know, at Old Trafford. You know, are people still complaining? Like, what do you think the general gist is?
I think some people still complain that he doesn't sharp or somewhere that he looked last year. I think they, not that he doesn't look sharp, I think he's almost trying to play himself into a little bit of form, but I think the fans are probably worried about it more than he is. You know, he's still, like you say, touch on there, he's got two goals now in August. Back-to-back games at Old Trafford, and I know Gary Neville touched on the fact that he'd never scored at Old Trafford up until last night, so it was probably a nice duck to break as well. But more importantly, I think sometimes we have to look at a bigger picture and see what else he brings to the team. We want him to be on the end of stuff, naturally. However, if he's going to bring more into the game, he can bring Ali into the game. Yeah, I mean, Ali had two great chances last night where he could have put him on a plate for him as well. So he could quite, and we could have had the penalty. So he could have walked away from there last night with maybe three or four. But that's kind of how the game goes. And then all of the Kane doubters and people whining about it will be saying, you know, well, he scored four goals last night, so it's a different ball. He must be great. But I think some fans probably need to look at the bigger picture. It's what he does off the ball as well. And he dropped deep last night to allow Moura to run into the middle. He pulled out to the left a few times. And I think that kind of, go back to Mourinho, who believed he beat us tactically. I'm not too sure they kind of, I'm not sure if they came to terms with that, because he pulled them out wide, he split the middle pairing, and Lucas ran in between them on the floor with pace. So he brings a lot more to just goals. I know we want him to score goals, but we can't complain. We're three games in, and he's two out of three.
And so Moura is top scorer. He did, like you say, swap with Kane quite a bit, which obviously seems to be quite a thing for them. And obviously when Kane does drop, that's when the runners do go, and obviously then it creates space. And against their back three, it was quite evident that they didn't really know exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, Herrera at right centre back is a, you know, I mean, for the goal, I'm trying to work out which goal it was. The goal were basically Smalling stepped up. I think it was the second goal.
Yeah, they had a lovely
Smalling stepped up. Herrera was playing him way onside.
They had a lovely line, like going like.
It's
like
just
that.
Crazy.
It was a mockery on their part, but you know, rather than do what the press do and say how bad United were, let's put it down to maybe some of our play, maybe not going long, maybe not playing down the channels. You know, maybe Kane moving out to the left and creating that space, which they probably expected us to play just Kane up at top, and the three behind him moving around. And Ali was quite rigid last night. Eriksen was quite rigid in terms of centre and right and then centre and left. And it was Moura who did the bits and bobs.
I think that's what I like about playing 4-2-3-1 is that my annoyance sometimes when we play wing-backs is that the wing-backs don't get further and up the field. They don't necessarily make the most of that formation. But for me yesterday, I mean, it was helped by the fact that the Man U defenders didn't really know their positions exactly, and they weren't sort of the best performance. But obviously, Eriksen had loads of space down that right, yeah, and Ali did quite a bit on the left-hand side, so that, and obviously we benefited from that. So Moura has got the goals. Do you see him as potentially, if, because we've spoke about Son being like potential, you know, striker if Kane does get injured, touch wood, hopefully never. But if it was to happen, would you see him? Could he be a striker? Could he be up there? Obviously, he's quite diminutive in the figure. He's not very strong, which is definitely a concern of mine. Could he boost like a bit of false nine? I mean, how do you think it could work?
Well, I can't see why he can't just kind of slot in the way Sonny slotted in last year. But, you know, if we was to lose Kane, then touch wood, we don't. I'd see no reason why Moura and Son couldn't both go in there and play the same way those two have. I mean, the movement would probably be exceptional, and it'd probably be a little bit quicker as well. But you know, I think we're in a good position. I think we've seen glimpses last night of Moura being able to, you know, to actually finish. You know, didn't overthink it. You know, it's quite cold and they're calculated in his finishing.
Both instinctive finishes.
Both are instinctive. You know, we go back to Ali and he's checking onto, he's trying to get onto his stronger foot sometimes. And Ali's a lot more clinical when he's not thinking either. I think when it's just on the end of it, just put it away. You know, he does that very, very well. So it's good to see somebody else kind of in and around the box. You know, just hitting it like we want him to sometimes. And yeah, I he could quite easily play in there for me, and there'd be room for Son as well. Obviously, if Kane's still fit and firing, then I suppose probably Ali and Eriksen at some point may have to start looking over their shoulder. And I know a lot of people say Eriksen should be pushed a little bit more. So, you know,
it's good to have problems.
It's a good problem. If you're going to have a problem, yeah, they're the problems
good
that
good
you
to
want,
have those
right?
problems. So, and then Rose starting at left back as well. How did you think he performed?
Yeah, I mean, he nearly gave one to Lukaku. It was lazy. To be honest with you, I've watched it back a few times and it was just lazy, you know, didn't really put anything into it, didn't look. I still think he's missed to say, he looks a bit sluggish. Mm. You know, it looks like he's trying to play himself into form as well. I feel like we've got two or three of those players just trying to find their form, but on the pitch. I don't think he's done too bad overall. You know, I think they've all got to come out of there with pats on the back. It's not an easy place to go. And, you know, if that's your first game, you know, you're being chucked in for the season, then, you know, I think he kind of caught up to speed with it, but I don't think he's quite there yet.
And there's talk of him still potentially wanting to go. There's talk of him potentially obviously leaving because the transfer window is open to, I believe, the 31st of August for Germany, Spain and France. The Italian window is already shut. But so there's still quite a few options potentially for him. You mentioned off camera that Poch had obviously said before that you didn't think he would play people that weren't wanting to be at the club, and obviously Toby Alderweireld is included in that bracket of players who could still potentially go, Dembele included, but obviously the fact they all started, was that trying to, you think, change their mind, or do you think it was...
No, I think it's probably the other way around. I think Poch is kind of, you know, I think part of that rant was where he keeps getting asked questions, you know, is Toby going to play, is Danny Rose going to play? You know, we kind of get the main media lines. We probably get the main BBC line or the main Sky Sports line, but there's probably lots of little newspapers and other reporters there asking that same question time after time. So I think that was kindly part of his, you know, his little rant that was kind of fueled with the same question. And he just laid it on the line, didn't he? He's like, if they don't want to be part of it, if they're not going to buy into the project, everybody knows the project. We all know where we are. You know, we're waiting for the stadium. We haven't spent any money. What we have is what we have. So if you want to be part of it, you know, on the training ground is where you crack on and show that you're going to be part of it. If you don't, you know, it's fine. We've got till the 31st, we've got till Friday, and, you know, any decent offers, and I think he'll consider it. But you're right, you touched on it, and most of them have played since. And
I think it's a good sign.
I think it's a good sign, and from my point of view, what's there, I'd like to keep. You know, if that window shuts now, and we just crack on. It looks like a happy camp. It looks... You know, like the boys are in it with each other. It's good as well. There's a couple of the youngsters. Winks is back.
Yeah,
you know, just starting to get those. Just starting to get those couple of minutes under his belt. I see Amos was on the bench again last night. The young lads, you know, which looks good for us. You know, they had quite a good pre-season. Some of those boys and haven't always played. So, you know, I think we've got enough to get us by till January. I for one ain't going to panic about it.
And we did have some transfer news today. Obviously, Moussa Sissoko is probably going to stay. Fenerbahce didn't go for him, unfortunately. It was offered. There was talk of that happening. But it's unfortunately not happened. So he's still going to be around. You know, he's another one who we are.
I think ultimately, if he leaves, there'll be a lot of relief fans around. I'm probably more happy to play the numbers game till January. We don't know what's around the corner. You know, we don't know when the next injury is from. So I'm happy to play the numbers game. I think we all know what he brings and what he doesn't bring as such. But it may be games where, you know, it enables us to rest the Dembele.
Yeah,
or 100%. You know.
So I think he does a job.
He's not great, but he does a job. So roll on January.
No plan de lesas, no plan de lesas.
Okay, it's time for our weekly game, and today we're going to be playing Top Trumps from the 2016-17 season. So these Top Trumps are slightly different. The ones we played last week are player ones, so it has stuff like height and goals scored in your career, that kind of stuff. But these ones have actually got matches from this 2016-17 season. So we've got the categories of goals, total shots, shots on target, corners, possessions. We've got five cards each. Let's see how we do. So, firstly, I'm going to go for total shots, 20.
I've got 19.
Wow. Okay, mine was Tottenham Hotspur 1, Crystal Palace 0.
Mine was Watford 1, Tottenham Hotspur 4.
Whew. Okay, I'll
so
have that one.
You can have that,
thank
even though it was more
much.
Clinical on the day.
Good. Solid. Okay, I'm going to go for possession, 65.2%. Bring it home.
60%?
Yes. Okay, so mine was Tottenham 1, Middlesbrough 0.
Again, we was just clinical on the day. Tottenham Hotspur 5, Swansea 0.
Oh, I remember that game.
Sometimes you just got to put the ball in it.
I remember that game. Son scored that quality volley. Okay, here we go. Oh, my word. I didn't realise how dominant we are. Are these all home games? No? Okay, cool. So, total shots, 31.
20.
20. Tottenham Hotspur 1, Sunderland 0. Wow.
I should have that, really. Tottenham Hotspur 2, Arsenal 0.
Okay, fair enough. 20 total shots. Okay, here we go. So final two here. I'm going to go for possession 64.1.
This is a shocker. 49.3%.
Wow. Against who was that?
Tottenham 1, Liverpool 1.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
And mine was Tottenham Hotspur 1, Leicester City 1.
Yes.
64%. Vincent Janssen, Cam's favourite, Vincent Janssen with the goal. Okay, I went to this game actually. It was amazing, one of my highlights of the season. And I'm going to go for possession 71.8.
I feel I've been stitched up here. 45.5%. Tottenham Hotspur 2, Chelsea 0.
Ah, great game.
So I've had the better games.
You've had the better games, although saying that. Tottenham Hotspur 1, sorry, Swansea 1, Tottenham Hotspur 3 was incredible. Down to 1-0 down.
Their last minute goals?
1-0 down, I think, with about 10 minutes to go, and it was all incredible. One match. Okay, fun times. We will crack on with more games next week. So, we wanted to discuss the Kung Ming Song situation, which is basically at the moment he is through to the semi-finals of the Asian Games. And we touched on it last week because obviously, hopefully now, he is closer to a medal, which will then guarantee that he doesn't have to do military service. If he doesn't get a medal, or if he doesn't win the championships, we believe, then he could well get a call-up within the next 18 months, and we would have to do 2 years of military service. What are your thoughts on that, Lee? Have you done military service yourself?
You look like an ex-military
man.
A little bit of cross-country is as far as it goes. Let's hope that he... I know somebody's rumoured and mentioned that maybe a medal may be enough. Let's hope they just go on and win it and be done. I think he's quite integral to what we've got going on at the moment. And it'd be a shame to lose him at this stage.
Yeah. We should point out that the person who gave that rumour was Rodney, and he's a little bit worse for wear after Carnival yesterday, so we're not really basically trusting a word he said. So they've basically got games against Vietnam or Syria in the semi-final, and then they could well maybe play Japan. So you would have thought they beat Vietnam or Syria, obviously Japan
got to get to the final.
Japan are a strong team, so...
Yeah, that should be their hardest game. They should get to the final. I think probably that'll be the hardest game. Looking at some of the results, that's probably got to be their hardest game. So let's hope he just turns on a bit
Fingers
of Sonny
crossed,
magic
Sonny.
And, you know, that he just does the job
Come
on the day.
Come on, Son. Nice one, Cyril. Okay, so it is Champions League draw this week, and we are in pot two, which is good. So if Liverpool had won the Champions League, we would have been in pot three, but we're in pot two. So we're in pot two. So the teams we're going to avoid are Borussia Dortmund, Porto, Shakhtar Donetsk, Napoli and Roma. So we're going to have one of these teams in our group, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, or Lokomotiv Moscow. Who would you want out of those? Who do you want to play?
Naturally, and based on their ability, I think you'd go Moscow. I think a lot of people in a group who quite like a good away day would always go big guns. And I think given our performances last year, should we fear anybody? You know, I think we've proved that we can play on that stage. I'll take them all on again. I'll take Madrid again. Definitely take Madrid again.
I think what the competition showed last season as well was that there's obviously some very good teams out there, but none of them are unbeatable, and a lot of them are defensively are quite weak. And so I think, you know, that's something, as we've shown last night, obviously we have the players that can hurt teams, and if we can be solid at the back, I think we've got a chance of doing quite well.
I don't think there's any reason why we couldn't look at being a consistent top eight team in Europe. Definitely going by last year. I think if you look at our performances, look at what we've done away. You know, we had great home games, but look at what we've done away to set ourselves up. We got out of group comfortably,
and then messed it all up at home to Madrid.
Stumbled at home.
It was the lowest point in the season for me, because I went to Turin, as quite a few of us did, and it was, you know, it was a great performance to come back there. And then when we just had that opportunity, we dominated in the first half. It was just all there, and it was just a little couple of minutes of just a lack in concentration. And then I think Poch lost it tactically as well. I don't think he changed. He didn't adapt when Juventus made those changes.
Oh, I'd agree. I think it's one of the few times he actually kind of froze. I felt like he kind of just ran out of an idea. We didn't change. We just put Llorente on with like a couple of minutes, and it was just kind of get it up there and grab a goal.
I mean, we know we mentioned that Moura wasn't necessarily that fit, but surely, you know.
I think that was a change. I think anybody who was watching that game at the time would have thought that would have been the change. But I still believe defensively on the night we should have been better.
Yeah. That defence there, like Juventus defence, that old defence, they surely would have struggled with Moura's pace.
Yeah. Kane came up against a brick wall, wasn't it? But, you know, he got us that far. So, yeah, we'll go again. We're wiser.
Exactly. I think they will definitely benefit from it.
Fear no one.
And the draw is, you've done your research, when's the draw?
I believe it's Thursday at 5.
Thursday at 5 o'clock, so we will have a special episode on that next week. So, slightly different news now regarding one of our ex-players and one of our club ambassadors, Gary Mabbott. I didn't realise this, but at the age of 17, he was told that he would have to give up football because of his diabetes, which I was not aware of. And you may or not know that because of his diabetes, he doesn't have any feeling in his feet.
Right.
This was highlighted in a story in an incident that happened 6 weeks ago. So Gary Mabbott was visiting the Kruger National Park with his daughter. When he was sleeping in the middle of the night, a rat came into his bedroom and decided to chew on his foot, as he put it. He said that it's made quite a big hole in his toe, going down to the bone, and he ate underneath his foot. I mean, that has just got to be one of the most random stories I've heard all year. And I mean, can you imagine waking up and just like looking down and seeing a rat like chowing down on your foot?
I wouldn't hold a pet rat. So one eating my toe while I'm asleep is...
But what a weird sensation to see it eating you, but you're not feeling it as well. That's just bizarre. Gary, we're thinking of you, and we know you're obviously an avid viewer and listener of the show, as all of the ex-Tottenham players are. And get well soon, and we're thinking of you and your messed up foot. Okay, it's time now to speak to the team that we are playing this week. And this week it is Watford, which is a fellow team that are top of the table, joint top, with 3 wins from 3. I mean, Ryan, you must be a happy bunny right now.
Pretty happy. I mean, I don't think it was a particularly outrageously difficult start for us, but you can only beat what's put in front of you. And we've looked really, relatively comfortable and looked like winning every game from the start. So I wasn't majorly hopeful going into the season, but it looks like we're playing pretty well.
And Pereira seems to be banging the goals in. Where has that come from? What's that about?
Yeah, well, he's always been an absolutely incredible footballer. He played in the Champions League final with Juventus. He's played alongside Messi for Argentina, but it's just been getting him fit and getting him a run of games. He's got fit and he's got a run of games, and look what he started doing. So, played in the right position. Everyone thought we'd miss Richarlison, but looks like we're not missing him one bit, and we're 45 million richer.
Very, very true. And so how long have you been a Watford fan? You a local boy?
I'm from Hemel Hempstead, so right near Watford. I've been going since about 1998. Right back when Tommy Mooney was banging them in, and we had three-sided grounds, and we were sitting in Division 1, Division 2, so about 20 years now, really.
Fantastic. So what are your sort of thoughts on the season now for Watford? Obviously, a fantastic start. Before the season started, where were you trying to predict? Where do you think you were going to finish?
Yeah. To be honest, I think it's a bit of a shame the Premier League now these days. You've got the top six, then you've got the rest, really. And last couple of years, we started fantastically and then fall off at Christmas. So I was just looking a bit more consistency, really, and not fall apart when it comes, once we get safe, not fall apart and take the foot off the pedal. That's what we've done. Well, last year you had it under Marco Silva. I think that, there was a lot of different circumstances there of him, basically.
You happy with Javi Garcia?
Javi Gracia, not Garcia.
Sorry.
Yeah, what he came in first was, he came in and sorted out defence, bit of organisation, which we were lacking, and he got things right at home first. So he had three home wins early on, including 4-1 at home to Chelsea, which got him on side with the majority of the home support, which is so vital. And it seems like we didn't score a goal away from home in the whole of 2018 last year until we played Burnley away a couple weeks ago. And we put three past them there. So it looks like he got simple things right first, and then he's kept a core of the squad. Like yourselves, we didn't do too much business in the summer. And I think a lot of Watford fans, myself included particularly, were a bit frustrated at lack of... You see the likes of Wolves and the likes of Fulham going out spending hundreds of millions. But if you're looking back at Spurs, no signings, three wins for free. Watford, other than Ben Foster, none of our new signings have been in our starting lineups, really. And there's a lot to be said for consistency and a bit more of a core, really. You've had Lucas Moura, who you brought in January, who has now settled in and he's firing him in. And I think that's true of Watford as well. You've seen Pereira come now, he's banging them in. Will Hughes is a massive part of our side. And we've still got De La Feu, who we've made permanent this summer, and the final Chalobah to come back. So I'm hoping for a top 10 finish, but I'd realistically be happy with anything from 14th up.
Okay, good times. And you mentioned Spurs a little bit there, and obviously Lucas Moura. Where do you think Tottenham are at the moment, sort of in terms of the Premier League?
I still think you're a little bit away from winning it, if I'm totally honest. I think you lack a bit of depth, which you see at the likes of City. De Bruyne's out injured, and they're still leaving the likes of Sané on the benches. And Liverpool's spent a lot of money, and their depth is really incredible. And I think that's what you're lacking a bit, to be honest. But I think you'll not easily make the top four, but I think you'll make top four. I do think the stadium, lack of communication to the fans, I think that will play a part this season. But I don't think playing at Wembley will hinder you this year. I think that was a bit of a hindrance last year. I think you're used to it, but it's a bit more the uncertainty that might derail you a little bit. But you're starting off okay, so it seems to be going all right.
I think we're just hoping that it won't actually transcend to the players. I mean, and I think once we do eventually move into the stadium, then I think this actually will be all forgotten because it's going to be so amazing. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I'm hoping.
I feel like it's kind of already blown over. I think it was... it came out last week. I think it was a bit of a... Not a storm in a teacup as such, but the media... I think the media would have liked it to have been bigger and more news, but I think... We didn't approach it the right way, but I think it's blown over now. And last night's result will just kind of smooth that over. We just need to push on now.
Winning always helps.
Always helps.
Yeah. Winning always helps.
It's one of those ones where that news comes out midweek and it's all everyone talks about in the build-up to a game. But as soon as the game starts, it doesn't really matter. And Pochettino has just got the boys playing without any thought about that at all. Quite impressive. You were brilliant last night. Put a lot of fear into my eyes a bit.
Well, it brings us nicely on to your predictions for Sunday.
Dele Alli, am I right in saying he hasn't scored yet this season? But he absolutely loves...
He did score in the first game, Newcastle.
Sorry, my bad. But he absolutely loves scoring against Watford. I've got so many memories of him scoring. And I know that celebration's coming right out against us. Harry Kane's broken his August ducts and he's... In my head, I'm like, Spurs comfortable win. I'm actually going... I'll be going to the game as well. So my first game of the season will be on Sunday. I'd like... In my head, I think you've got to think Spurs have got this comfortably, but my heart says we're playing well, we've got a bit of momentum, so I'll go for 2-2 draw here. I think there's going to be goals. We could cause you guys some problems, but just depends on who you guys have played in centre midfield, because I think Decore and Capu, who's been a new man for us this season, and he is always absolutely... Well, when we play against you guys, Capu is very motivated, obviously. And that can sometimes lead to him having the worst game of his life because he's thinking about it too much, or he's absolutely brilliant. Whenever we play Arsenal, by the way, Capu is absolutely fantastic. I think he's got a bit of that Spurs left in him where he loves playing against Arsenal. But I'll go for a 2-2 draw. This might come back to bite me, but I'll go for 2-2.
Okay. All right, I'm going to throw to Lee now for your first prediction on the Thing I Love Most show.
Well, I did get the Fulham one right. On the page. Okay. So I'm going for the same. I'm going for a 3-1 Tottenham win. I do fancy you guys to score, funnily enough, but I'm thinking we might just have a bit much up top. So I'll go 3-1.
I'm going to go 2-1. This seems to be my solid prediction, and it's come true once so far this season, so I'm going to stick with 2-1. But I think it will be a very good game. I think it's great to see you guys doing well and playing good football and scoring goals, which is what you want to do. So fingers crossed you're not down there, you know, towards the bottom this season, and you do sort of make a challenge for the top 10. I think that would be good to see. Cool. Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming on, mate. We appreciate
it. No worries,
it.
Man.
And we'll maybe catch up with you later on in the season.
Of course, man. Thank you very much for having me.
Best of luck. Take care, mate. Right. All the best. Okay, so it's time for our Player of the Week. And this week, because Lee was our special guest, I threw it over to Lee. And Lee, you came up with...
Chris Waddle.
Chrissy Waddle. So a few Chris Waddle facts for you. After 46 goals and 170 league games for Newcastle, Waddle joined Tottenham Hotspur in 1985 for £590,000, which was decided by a transfer tribunal. Do you remember transfer tribunals? That's madness. I completely forgot about those. He scored twice on his league debut, which was a 4-0 win over Watford on the opening day of the league season. And we had a disappointing season where we finished 10th a year after finishing third, which resulted in the dismissal of Peter Shreves as manager and the appointment of David Pleat from Luton Town. After joining Tottenham, he then went on and played for England and obviously took that wonderful penalty in the semis in 1990. So he moved on. So he was with us for 4 years and he moved on to Marseille. So what are your memories of Waddle then?
So just kind of why he happens to be one of my favourite players is growing up and playing football, I played as a winger once at like 10, 11 years old. I moved from right back where I kind of modelled myself on Chrissy Hughton. We have a very similar background and heritage. So, growing up, it was always good to have a player to look up to. Moved up and end up playing on the wing. And John Barnes kind of played for another team then. So didn't really see too much or didn't really watch much. But went to watch Chrissy Waddle. He joined, I think, probably halfway through the season. I first went to watch a Tottenham game. And then I started going regular with my uncle. And as a kid, you'd always look at somebody, you know, that you kind of modelled your game on a little bit. And he was an out-and-out winger, kind of proper old-school winger. You know, you play 4-3-3 and yeah, he just dropped that shoulder and go past people, and had end product, could put a decent cross in, you know. So that's quite a rare thing for, well, we don't play modern wingers today, but, you know, probably big Aaron Lennon fan, but always got slated for his end product.
So, yeah, sure, of
course.
When
you look back at Waddle, pretty old school, but didn't really have the pace as such, but very much like Gascoigne, just had that deceiving, you know, drop a shoulder, go past, and nobody really kind of got back. You know, he put his body in the way well, could, and deliver a good ball. Yeah, and scored a few, you know, he had a few thunderbolts in his locker. He had a goal in his locker. So, yeah, kind of somebody I kind of modelled myself on as a winger and, you know, watched over the years he was at Tottenham.
And where would you think he would, one, fit in with this current Tottenham setup? Do you think he would get into this team? And two, what do you think his market value would be at the moment in this crazy, crazy yeah. world we're living in?
I think the game's evolved. You know, it really has evolved. And I think we're at a time now where probably wingers don't get into teams. They're probably more wing-backs these days. So somebody like Chris Waddle probably wouldn't play. You know, really wouldn't play unless you played a certain kind of formation. You know, wasn't renowned for his tackling back, didn't need to because there was a right-sided midfielder or, you know, a left-sided midfielder. So, yeah, I think the game's evolved where his sort of type of player is probably kind of, you know, they've moved him out, almost dinosaur-like. So, yeah, I mean, he would probably, you know, in his day, he probably could grace a lot of decent teams. A market value, if he could play today... What do you go for then? 590,000 by a tribunal. I'd say what he'd bring to a team. I'd go 15, 20.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think that'd be fair.
Half as much as Mr. Sissoko.
Yeah, that kind of hurts a little bit, but it is what it is.
Sorry, Chris, if you are listening, which I know you are, because obviously you're an ex-Tottenham player and all of the ex-Tottenham players are subscribers to the YouTube channel and the podcast on the various forms that it is available. So, I think it's a bit harsh. I think, you know, 25 to 30. He was a baller. He was a baller.
No, he was, and he could.
And that's like an average baller now is like 30 mil. If you're paying 30 million for Sissoko, that surely has to be the benchmark for an average player.
I'll say we'll
take it. And he's better than average.
Best thing to do is take it to tribunal.
We'll take it to tribunal. I hope you're okay with that, Chris. So thank you very much for watching once again and listening. So as you know, the podcast is available in various forms, and obviously we have the YouTube video to go along with it as well. We are all social media channels available. So we have our YouTube channel, which can be subscribed to. We have our Twitter handle, which is TTILM Show. We also have the same on Instagram, and also the Thing I Love Most Show on Facebook as well. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to get involved in the show in any way, Tottenham fans or just opposing fans, then please do send your comments and subscriptions in. We'd love to hear from you. So fingers crossed it's another 3 points on Sunday and we can get to the top of that league. We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching and listening.